The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week I began exploring this set of qualities that are this beautiful set of qualities that are said to both are necessary to be cultivated as we practice, but are also naturally arising the more we engage with the practice of mindfulness and wisdom. And this list is called the Paramis, and there are 10 qualities in this list. I'll just name them right now. Dana, or giving, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. And I thought, last week I did kind of an overview of them, and I thought this week I wanted to focus primarily on the first one, on giving, and it's kind of the mental quality that goes along with that. Giving is an action, giving is an activity, but the mental quality that it supports is generosity. And so this evening I'd like to focus on those two. And in a way, something I think is important with all of the paramis is highlighted here in this pairing between giving and generosity, because it's understood that this action of giving, if it's done in a certain way, will begin to cultivate this quality of heart that is open and freely offering. So a quality of heart that feels generous is cultivated through this activity of giving. And this is an interesting thing to reflect on, how our actions and our mind feed back with each other. You know, often I think in our culture, perhaps more than some, we have a lot of sense that, you know, we want to be true to ourselves, and we want to, you know, if there's something in our minds that, you know, we shouldn't be fooling people or fooling ourselves by behaving in some other way than what's in our mind. And, you know, that certainly what's in our mind can affect our behavior and can affect our system. You know, when we're angry, it impacts how we feel. And, you know, if we were to repress anger, that we know that's not such a helpful thing. And so our only other thought is, well, then I should express it. So we have this notion in some ways that we should, you know, in being fully honest, it means expressing what's in our minds. So it's true that what's in our minds does often come out in our actions. But this feedback loop between the mind and the body, you know, it's clear to us that what's in our mind impacts our body. Even in simple ways, if we're frustrated, it may create an expression on our face. You know, we can read each other's moods this way through seeing what the body looks like. And so our minds impact our bodies. That's pretty clear. We're pretty familiar with that. It's also true that the other direction, that how we are with our bodies can influence our minds. And this, in some ways, this is one of the tools that we can use in our mindfulness practice. And I'm not suggesting here that we repress states of mind in order to behave as if, you know, in some way. So if we're impatient, for example, if we're feeling impatient, I'm not suggesting that we repress impatience to act like we're patient. But I am suggesting that there's the possibility, and this is this kind of, it's a delicate dance this kind of a practice. It's a delicate dance to recognize, yes, okay, there's impatience happening in the mind. Let's see if I can know that, be completely honest and truthful about that, know fully that that impatience is there, and yet see if I can behave in a way such that it doesn't leak out into my body. So in effect, act patiently, even though I'm feeling impatient. So it's a kind of a delicate dance, this exploration. But in my own practice, I've seen this actually is very powerful. If I'm not repressing the mind state, if I'm not pretending I'm not impatient, then if I fully know, yep, impatience is here, but boy, let's see if I cannot reinforce it by, you know, acting like I'm impatient, and instead see if I can, how would a patient person behave here? You know, bring that kind of question into the mind. How would a patient person behave? What I've seen in my own experience is walking that very fine line, the behavior, acting patiently, begins to rebound on the mind. And it encourages the mind to become, have the quality of patience begin to be there. It's quite surprising. It takes this delicate dance of not repressing what's in the mind. And so this is, you know, with this exploration around giving and generosity, this is part of the exploration, that we can cultivate the quality of the heart that gives through the act, or the quality of the heart of generosity through the act of giving, but not by repressing or denying that we're feeling, I don't want to give right now, or, you know, so it's not about that. But just to play with this place of, if I want to cultivate a quality of a generous heart, perhaps if I act generously, it will begin to rebound on the mind. And so I'd like to just explore this bridge, this back and forth bridge between our actions and our mind with respect to generosity this evening. So the action of giving, dana is the word in Pali. It means giving. And that is what cultivates, that's this action is what cultivates this quality of generosity. The Pali word for generosity is chaga. And so that's the inner quality. That's the heart. That's the mind. Generosity is an expression of the mind that wants to, way of expressing it is that the heart that wants to offer and share what it has in a skillful and wholesome way. The text describe generosity in this way. What is the treasure of generosity? There's a case of a disciple of the noble ones, awareness cleansed of the stain of stinginess, living at home, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in being magnanimous, responsive to requests, delighting in the distribution of alms. This is called the treasure of generosity. And so this is, you know, the aim of the practice isn't to give. You know, the aim of the practice isn't the distribution of either, you know, our what we have to offer either financially or our time, but really the practice is about cultivating this quality of heart. And in the way of looking at the activity rebounding on the mind, the way that happens, the way the activity of giving would cultivate the quality of generosity is beginning to look at and understand how we are engaging with that practice of giving? What's in our heart? What's the motivation? Why? Why are we doing this? This is this place of why we take an action is the kind of the foundation of how actions rebound on our minds in a beautiful way. If we act with an intention to cultivate peace, ease, happiness, delight, generosity, if that's our motivation, that has the impact on our minds to kind of head our minds in that direction. It's like we're inclining the mind in that way through maybe even just attempting to connect with that motivation, to connect with a wholesome motivation. So our attitude while giving is really one of the places to look at. If it's not just about, like, you know, writing a check or something, but, you know, what's in our hearts? In so many ways in our culture, we have kind of separated ourselves from this looking into, you know, what's my motivation here? You know, the way money tends to separate us from things in a way. And, you know, I have certain things that I like to support. And, you know, right now, you know, to support them, all I have to do is, like, write a check or go onto the internet. And I kind of don't have to think about what I'm doing. You know, it's just like it can just be a mindless thing. And that isn't the way that giving really supports our heart. And so if you do give, you know, when you find yourself, you know, wanting to give or, you know, contributing to something or other, it's useful to reflect on the benefit that this will have, who this will serve, you know, why this is something that your heart wants to support. That will open the heart. So the texts talk about these motivations for giving, and they're pretty exhaustive. You know, it's like there's so many different reasons and ways we can give. There's several texts that have lists of here's a bunch of reasons why somebody might give things, and it's pretty exhaustive. So people might give out of affection, out of anger, out of stupidity, out of fear, because of tradition, because someone else has given us a gift, because we hope for a gift in return. We give something to gain a good reputation, because it's considered a good thing to do. We give because we want to help others. We also can give because we know that it gladdens the heart and mind to give. And this is an interesting thing as we start to really look into giving. We see that if we're really connected with this act of giving, it does make us happy. When we are giving in a skillful way and not overstretching ourselves, perhaps I'll get to that more in a moment, but when we're giving in a skillful way, the heart delights in both the thinking about offering something, in the seeing it received, if we do see it received. Now, this is something, again, we're kind of separated from that so much in our culture that we offer something and we don't see how the person receives it. I know that it's a delight for me when I offer something to somebody to see how they receive it. You know, that adds to the joy. And then thinking about it afterwards can also be a delight for our hearts. And so the act of generosity, it serves us in so many ways in our practice. You know, if we're, you know, one of the key things about generosity, I meant to start here actually, you know, it really points to generosity kind of at the start of this list of paramis, really points to the fact that this path that the Buddha offers, that the Buddha offers us, is not just about like closing our eyes and sitting in meditation, but it's a very relational practice. It includes how do we connect with our fellow human beings? How do we relate to each other? And so there's the first two paramis, the first two in this list of generosity and ethics, are all about relationship and skillful ways to be in community and to be engaged with each other. You know, so many things about how we are with each other can be seen as generosity. It's not just about writing a check or, you know, giving somebody something, but the way we are in the world can be a gift. You know, driving down the freeway, are we generous in terms of letting somebody come in for a merge, or do we speed up? If we see somebody struggling in the grocery store line, do we let them go ahead of us? I mean, there's so many ways that our everyday activities can be framed in terms of generosity. And so beginning to look at this and cultivate this relationship of caring and connection, that to me is a lot of what this teaching is about, is this caring and connection between not just us as human beings, but ourselves and the planet, ourselves and the other beings that live on this planet. So the whole of this this teaching is pointing to relationship. So when we are giving in a way that we're feeling this connection, and when we're not feeling that connection, we may not experience this gladness. But again, this practice of generosity is partly about helping us to recognize that we're not living alone on this planet, that we are interdependent and interconnected, interrelated. We rely on each other to live. So this, as we offer something, as we connect to that heart of goodwill, it makes the heart glad to give. You don't have to believe me. You might just explore it a little bit, see what happens. The last one on the list, and in some ways this list is kind of, you know, moving from lesser or, you know, more everyday reasons to give, you know, that we give because of tradition or because someone else has given us a gift, or, you know, because it's a good thing to do, or, you know, so it's kind of, these are the more everyday reasons to give. And then wanting to help others is a more beautiful reason to give. And then recognizing that it is an expression of this connection, this gladness of heart and mind, that it opens the heart, it softens the heart. It creates this field in the heart where we begin to recognize that we impact each other, that our actions are not that our actions ripple out into the world. The last reason given is that the act of giving, we can give, a reason why we might give is because it supports our heart to let go of the ways that it gets constricted and holds on. You know, that we, you know, kind of create our little territories and our little, you know, worlds and say, oh, I have to keep these things and make sure these don't go away. And it makes that boundary a little more permeable so that we, you know, it's more like a flow of resource rather than feeling like, okay, I have to kind of shore these things up and not like let anything go. It's almost an act of trust to say, okay, if I offer something, you know, what happens if I let go? If I let go. So this, the practice of generosity is in the in the teachings of the Buddha around, you know, where do we suffer and how do we struggle in our lives? A lot of it is about, you know, this movement to just hold on and to try to control and to keep our worlds in certain kind of order. And this movement of generosity is kind of an acknowledgement of, okay, maybe there's another way. Maybe I don't have to hold so tightly. So that's another reason why we might give. In my own exploration of generosity, I see watching the motivations. It's really helpful if you are exploring generosity. And the first place I'd encourage this, I said last week that creativity rules with the paramis, that in terms of practices, a lot of these are daily life practices. The paramis themselves are really understood to be qualities that we engage with and cultivate in our relationships and in our daily lives. And so finding ways to be curious about these qualities in our daily lives. Are they present? Does this quality of generosity ever arise? Does the wish to give ever arise? Does the wish to give arise, but then there's this, ooh, better not do that? So being curious about that, and how might it be that we can encourage the cultivation of generosity in our activities in the day? And one of the ways to do this is to begin to be curious when there is an impulse to give, to get curious about the motivations. Why are we giving? This great list we could check in. Why are we giving? And what I've seen in my own exploration of this is a lot of mixed motivations. Some of it is, that I want to give to support and to help others, and then some of it is that I want something in return. And it may not be necessarily that I want somebody else to give me something. But the something I want in return is for me to think of myself as a good person. That I'm... I would love for other people to know that I'm giving so that they can think I'm a good person, but at least I have to think I'm a good person too. So it's like there's a little bit of conditionality in there, a little bit of this sense of giving for a reason in order to feel a certain way about myself. So it's not as the freely giving, awareness cleansed of stinginess, freely generous. It's not completely freely because it's got some condition on it. It's got some demand in return. And so This is, it's not like we're going to be able to flip off those motivations that are less than, this practice is really humbling. We get to see what's going on in our minds, and I'd rather know what's going on in there, but as we do see what's going on in our minds, we see a lot of things that we feel like, wow, really? Really? I want that to... So, a lot of this stuff that goes on has been pretty well suppressed, or, it's kind of below the surface of what we, see day to day. And so as we start to actually look at our minds and see that there's a lot of kind of selfish stuff going on in there, this is actually good news to see it. To see it is good news, because when it's not seen, it's just going to keep perpetuating itself. When it's seen, there's the possibility, if we're not like beating ourselves up for being selfish or, tight about something, if we're not doing that, but just instead, wow, look at that. This is what the mind is doing this. Wow, I'm glad I know that. When we can see it, when we can see our motivations, we have some opportunity to hold that, kind of like I was saying earlier, recognize, that wanting to get something back, that wanting to be seen in a certain way is happening. I don't have to let that stop me from giving. or to feel like I have to get rid of that. But let's see if maybe I can acknowledge that. And then often what I see in my own mind is mixed motivation. So yeah, I want something in return. I genuinely want to offer something to somebody and hope they appreciate it and hope that they have use for it or have value for it or that it's a benefit for them. So I genuinely wish that. And so to know that there's also this kind of selfish wish along with that really open-handed wish. Maybe if seeing both of them, not to repress the selfish one, but to maybe land a little bit more in the action coming from the more open-handed one. And see how that impacts your heart. We are not going to be able to just flip the switch and turn off these more selfish motivations. But the way that they begin to transform is through seeing them. Because when we see them, you know, when we see those selfish motivations, you know, some part of our heart goes, ooh, you know, oh, that feels kind of tight. That feels kind of sticky, you know. It's not got that quality of the heart that feels open and free and at ease in the world. It feels defended. It feels protected. It feels fearful. And so we begin to recognize that selfish heart has some suffering to it. And as the mindfulness starts to open to that, you know, the mindfulness and wisdom, as we recognize these, and this is human. You know, it's human. It's human to be selfish. It's also human to not be aware that we're being selfish. And when mindfulness can begin to recognize what's actually going on in there and see, you know, it's like our mind not seeing the selfishness, our mind not seeing what's going on, that stingy feeling, that kind of protected, defended feeling, that the mind is unaware of how that is impacting us. It's kind of we're the mind is fooling itself, thinking somehow this defended stance, this protected stance, is making us happy. And when mindfulness begins to reveal this defended and protected stance for the suffering that it is, that delusion of that being the way to happiness begins to be navigated in a new way. Our hearts and our minds begin to let go of those defended, protected stances and begins to gravitate towards the heart that feels more open, that feels more easeful. So the mindfulness kind of, it's a slow journey moving from contracted, defended, to the heart that is undefended, really, undefended. Because there is this fear that the undefended heart will be hurt. And so it's a slow process of learning to trust that the defended heart actually doesn't protect us from being hurt. We just think it does. And that the undefended heart actually creates the conditions for hurt to not happen. And again, you know, you don't have to believe me on this. It's a process of exploration around as we turn with attention to our experience, feeling into. To me, there's a lot. It's a lot around noticing. Does it feel contracted, tight? Does it feel open and at ease? And as mindfulness is present for that, the mindfulness and the wisdom begin to understand contracted and tight, this organism doesn't really want to be there. The organism much more wants to move towards open, receptive. And this practice of generosity is a way to begin to see these undercurrents at work. The texts also talk about, so there's the motivations for giving, but they also, the texts also talk about taking care how we give. And this is interesting, and again, I'll read some of these. It says we should give with attentiveness and give respectfully. Give in a way that does not belittle or hurt the person given to. That's an interesting thing to reflect on. You know, it's again, it's creating this relationship between the person who's giving and the person who's receiving. And to be sure that that's not done in an offensive, belittling, or hurtful way. It recommends giving in season at an appropriate time. And the example here, you know, the examples in the text are, you know, an appropriate time would be giving to somebody who's new in the village, giving to somebody who's going away, giving to someone who's ill, giving in times of famine. And to me, in some ways, this points to some of the cultural considerations around giving. You know, in these were probably some cultural times that were encouraged for giving. So reflecting in our culture, you know, what are cultural times for giving? An encouragement to connect with empathy while giving, to give with a heart that essentially is trying to understand where the person is that you're giving to. Know, so that there's a connection. Again, the connection, so important. So to have a sense of empathy for the person. This will support recognizing whether the way that you're giving is done in a helpful way or a hurtful way. Another really interesting piece in this, one should give without adversely affecting oneself or other. So we've talked a little about, you know, not adversely affecting other in terms of not giving in a hurtful way or a belittling way. But this brings in giving in a way that doesn't hurt ourselves. This is explicitly in there, you know, that we need to look at what's wise. This brings in wisdom for us in terms of this quality of generosity. It's not, this isn't just, you know, suggesting just go give everything away. But look at what is skillful. So to me, this brings in the question of looking at priorities. You know, it needs to be, giving needs to be balanced with wisdom. You know, there's so many different circumstances between people. How and what we offer will be vastly different. And so not trying to compare yourself in terms of giving with other, but really looking at what works for this being, what is appropriate in terms of giving for this being. There's so many different things, ways that we can give, different types of offerings. You know, there's always, of course, the physical, the possessions and financial offerings, material goods. But there's also our time, our service. Service is a huge place of generosity. Our conduct, how we are in the world, can be understood to be a gift. The next parami of ethical conduct, of ethics, if we engage in the world with this commitment to non-harming, we are really offering a gift to everybody who's in contact with us, that they do not need to be afraid in our presence. So the you know, our conduct is a gift, and we may not think about this. You know, in some ways, this is a way we can reflect on framing our encounters through giving. You know, we might not think about that sometimes we just kind of take for granted a certain level of ethical conduct that we have. We beat ourselves up when we do some, you know, small thing like, oh, I forgot and took a pencil from work or something, you know. But we, you know, basically that there's a lot of the good heart and the intention of non-harming that's present in all of us. And we take that for granted. We don't actually recognize that that's an offering. You know, it amazes me sometimes that our society works as well as it does. And partly that's because largely people engage in ethical ways. And this is a gift. It's a gift to all of us that we have this sense of, you know, that we don't just walk into somebody's house and take things that belong to them. Or, you know, it's like, that's, we don't think of that as a gift, right? We think of it as being just like that would be wrong to do that. But the suttas point out that this engagement with non-harming is actually a gift. And so we can recollect this. Recollect our goodness and appreciate that that is an offering. Kindness. We can give kindness. We can give our presence. Just being with somebody. You know, somebody who's suffering. Somebody who's ill or sad or confused or grieving. I've seen such a power to just being willing to sit with them and be there, to not have to have them engage in conversation, but just, yeah, I see that hurts. I'm willing to sit here with you and be with you. So again, there's so many different ways that we can give, different, you know, we might not think about it as giving to sit with somebody like that. So again, this is recognizing when there is giving happening and taking it in, you know, appreciating our own goodness. This is a big part of this. Another text that I like, this again points to framing how we are in the world as an offering. You know, just like our everyday activities going through the world, so many of them may be actually able to be seen as an offering to support somebody else's life. The Buddha gives us an analogy. He says, even if one throws away the rinsings of a pot or cup into a village pool or pond, intentionally wishing that the living beings there may live on them, even this would be a source of merit, not to speak of gifts to human beings. And so he's pointing to, you know, the simple act in this case, something that people would do every day, rinsing a pot and tossing the rinsings into onto the ground. That if you do that consciously with the wish that the beings and the ground would be able to be nourished by the little food particles that were left in the rinsings, that would be an offering, that is something to recognize as an act of offering, if you do it intentionally with that wish in your heart. And so, you know, framing or beginning to recognize that so much of our encounters in the world can be understood in this context of generosity. At one point I was with a friend and we were having dinner at a restaurant, and it was a fellow Dharma teacher. And as we were getting out our money to pay for the dinner, my friend said, do you ever reflect on the fact that we're having dinner here and offering, you know, we're paying for this meal, it's an offering to the people who work here. It supports their livelihood for us to do this. there's a way in which this is an act of giving because it supports them in their life. Again, this is a sense of framing our encounters through this heart of connection and sharing. And so it's so easy to ignore the waiters and waitresses and not, you know, really recognize that there's actually a relationship going on here. It's not just a financial exchange. There's something actually much more meaningful that can be happening. And it's not like you have to, like, you know, do a soulful gaze into the waiter's eyes or anything, you know. Just reflect on this. Reflect on how this is a connection, a caring that's happening. So in terms of offering and generosity and this wisdom, the piece of wisdom of looking at not adversely affecting oneself, looking at priorities. I kind of took a little detour from priorities for a little while. You know, that looking at priorities in our lives, sometimes I like to think about my life as a bunch of resources. I've got my time. I've got my skills. I've got my financial support. I've got my house. I've got, you know, my possessions. All of this is resources. And, you know, resources, we might think of like, oh, I've got to keep my resources, shore them up, make sure that I'm okay, you know, 10 years in the future or something. But another way of exploring it might be that if we're all exploring or if we're all in community together, it's like, what do I want to nourish with my resources? You know, think of the resource of water as an example in a way. It's like water is a resource and we can decide what we want to nourish with water, you know, what we choose to do with water. And likewise, our resources of time, of our financial resources, we might think about it in that way. One book that I read around this topic of, you know, basically, how do we make this very worldly dharma, this worldly aspect of our lives, money, how do we bring it into our heart? So that it doesn't feel just like something that's like, you know, spirituality and money, they don't mix. You know, it's like, the book is called The Soul of Money. I really appreciated some of the ideas in this book. And this notion of money as resource and flow really resonated with me. And to me, it also feels that way about time. You know, that what do I want to nourish? What do I want? Where do I want to choose to place my time, to spend my resource, my precious resource of time, not to try to shore it up and keep it, but what can be nourished with my resource of time? What can be nourished with my resource of my financial, what I can offer financially? The analogy in the book points out that it's not so helpful with water to just like keep it behind a dam all the time. I mean, there's some use for that. Like here in California, it's pretty clear we need to do that. But water works best when it can be in a flow. You know, when it can nourish the rivers and the streams, and then go to the oceans and go back into the atmosphere and then fall again. It's like it recycles in a very broad way. And in some ways we can think of our resources in that way. What do we want to nourish? Where are our priorities? Where do we want to place our resources? What do we want to do with our time? What's important for us? So in terms of this practice, as a practice, I encourage experimentation. You know, I've talked a little bit as we've gone through this topic of ways to explore it, looking at when giving comes up, looking at motivation, and being honest with ourselves about that, to play with giving, even if we may not feel generous, to play with it, but to take care with that it not adversely impact us. One practice Gil suggested at one point, and I played with this, he said, take a $20 bill, you know, this is it's not an insubstantial amount of money, and put it in your pocket, and then just see, you know, it's yours to give away. You know, it's a $20 bill, and you're going to give it away to somebody. And see what happens as you have that in your pocket, thinking about it. You know, what happens to you as you encounter situations where you might give it or might not give it? What happens? Is there the impulse to give and then a whole bunch of thoughts of, oh, maybe not this one? Or just watch it. So you get a kind of a lesson in your own mind and its relationship to giving. And then at some point, there may be a very strong motivation to just give it away. And at that point, you know, play with that. At one point, I played with a practice around giving. I decided at some point, whenever the urge to give came up, that I would follow through on it. And, you know, I got this one from Joseph Goldstein, and I found I had a similar experience that he did. He said, what surprised me was, you know, not that I was like so overwhelmed with the urge to give that I was giving everything away. You know, it wasn't coming up that much, you know. That's humbling. Again, it's humbling. But I followed through on it. Just like every now and then there'd be this like urge. I remember at one point I was in this museum store and I saw this gift, I saw this thing in this museum store that made me think of the daughter of a friend of mine. And instantly there was this thought, oh, that would be perfect for that, for my friend's daughter. And there was that impulse, that delight in thinking about that. And then a whole bunch of reasons why I shouldn't do it. It's not the time, and it's not the birthday, and it's not whatever, and, you know, my friend will think this or that, and it's like, wow. You know, so just being kind of aware of this showed a whole bunch of stuff to me in my mind. I did go ahead and buy it and sent it, you know, it's like, and that was one of those that was a really joyous one, you know, it's like, it was just one of those out of the blue things. So, you know, you can find ways to experiment with this and framing our encounters in terms of giving, beginning to explore, you know, this notion of the rinsings of the pot, you know, how might we be generous in our normal everyday lives that we're not aware that it's generosity or not conscious of it as generosity? It's also interesting. The other day, it was interesting. I had a spontaneous urge for generosity, and it was like not a big deal because, you know, I had received something. This is one of the fun things to give away. When you receive something, sometimes it can be fun to pass it forward. And so I was at Pete's, and I think they had been really slow or something, and so they gave me a little card that said, "Here, have a free cup of coffee on us the next time," and. The next time I was in Pete's, you know, I heard the person ahead of me, I wasn't going to get coffee, and I heard the person ahead of me ordering coffee, and I said, oh, I've got this card, I could give it to him. So I did, I gave it to him. He looked so confused. You know, it's like, what's this for? I said, it's just a gift. But aren't you going to use it? No, it's fine. He finally could say thank you, and he looked genuinely delighted. But sometimes it can be startling for people to be the recipient of a gift at times. So, you know, it just play with it. You know, play with it and see what happens for you. And discernment, of course, is important in this experimentation. So we have a couple minutes if there's comments or questions about this. Yeah, and would you use the mic? Pass the mic back. And it's not, I don't think. Is the light on the side? Yeah, there's a button on the side. There.
I have a little confusion. I mean, I really appreciate the concept of giving and openness and how it creates an open feeling in yourself. I have a little confusion about the concept of anonymous giving, mm-hmm. because if there's an anonymous gift, then there is no response. So then you're not ego involvement.
This culture has elevated anonymous giving in a way, in some ways. In the Buddha's day, the best way to give a gift was said to be hand-to-hand, that it was not anonymous. So, that's something interesting to recognize, that the practice of generosity and the practice of giving is intended to create connection and relationship. And so if there's that remove, there's less of an opportunity for that to happen. There can be times, I definitely knew there were times where, in terms of my own giving, I didn't want the person I was giving to feel beholden to me for what I was offering. And so for that reason, I gave it anonymously. And so the exploration there was about recognizing, yes, this is an offering, and it created a connection internally to me with that person, but not, it wasn't known on the other side. And so we have to recognize that sometimes there may be a reason for the anonymous giving, and yet it can also be very powerful to give directly, hand to hand. So exploring that for yourself, and if you find an anonymous giving that there's, the giving, the writing a check to a charity is kind of anonymous giving, your name is on the check, but it's pretty removed. And so a little bit of that reflective practice of how does this impact people? How does this gift create good conditions? That can support a little bit of the that quality of that open-heartedness and that connectivity.
I guess the obverse of that to me is that there's an expectation that you will get some reward from your giving.
When it's hand-to-hand? When you're giving?
Well, for example,
when it's not anonymous giving.
Are you going to give cash to a charity, or are you going to give a check and expect that you're going to get an IRS benefit from it?
Yeah.
Or are you giving a gift to someone with the expectation that you're going to have indebtedness or a feeling of gratitude?
Well, this is definitely what the teaching encourages us to look at, So, getting the IRS receipt, there may be practical reasons for that. But is there some sense of, as I said, giving in order to have a sense of I'm a good person, or, somebody else thinks something of me? We need to look at that. It's those mixed motivations, those motivations for that are going to be there, whether we give in person or not. So it's really important to watch those and to see what's there. We're not going to be able to stop those, at least in my experience. It's not so much that we stop it, but beginning to have it revealed to us is really helpful. So it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention. Next week, talk about ethics. Non-harming.